Welcome to Exploration 1, Lecture 5. This is theoretically the Wireshark lecture where I show you all a few things about how to use Wireshark and then Brian shows me up because he's worked out more about Wireshark than I have. So, let's make a start. First of all, anybody got any questions, queries, things they want to ask about before we launch into the basics of the Wireshark? Alrighty. Okay.
I should sound better.
One of the things you do, you do.
Yeah, I'm on the Olympus. I turned my amplifier up to 100, which is what I thought I did at first.
Okay. Yeah.
Amp.
Yeah, shush. We're late. Okay. Cool. Let's get on with this. You can rabbit at us after lecture. How do you get your control key to work for Ventrilo? Who's asking about that? You go into setup and you click on. Oh, maybe Grace can help you because, like, I
what
don't
are we trying
have
to
time.
Get done?
Control key for Ventrilo and hotkeys and things.
You have to go
use
into
push
setup.
To talk,
yeah.
Yeah. You tick push to talk. You go into setup. You jaws cursor down to the OK button after you've tabbed to the hotkey field, and then you press the hotkey, and then you left mouse click the OK button. Well, use a different hotkey. Make sure use direct input to detect hotkey is checked if you're using control, I think. That's important. Otherwise, Grace will give you a hand with it because she's tandemable.
I'll have to do it on Friday when I'm at home because I can't do it here.
Where's your dongle?
It's in the back of my computer at home.
Oh, all right, okay. Well, you can help him on Skype anyway, because you're not involved in the lecture. Okay, I don't need you yet anyway. Okay. Why would you want to capture packets on a network? A lot of people, we've all been talking about the OSI reference model. We've all been talking about these weird things called packets, frames, bits, segments, and data. And it probably all looks a bit strange if you're into that sort of thing. So obviously what has to happen is you as a network technician need to be able to see what sort of frames and stuff or what sort of packets are on the wire, what they contain, and apart from stealing everybody's POP3 passwords and their Facebook cookies and a few other things, there are actually legitimate uses for packet snooping to see, for example, why traffic is being stopped, why things are being problematic, those sorts of things. Now, there are a number of tools to do this. I'm just going to turn the radio off because some woman seems to think that to be able to chart, you need to whinge horrendously into a microphone with some doof-doof in the background. Okay, she's gone. One of the problems with packet capturing when you're vision impaired is it's very difficult to see the forest for the trees, or to perceive the forest for the trees, if we're being politically correct. And what that means is that there's often too much data for you to easily sift through. Basically what our job is to get some meaningful output for your speech synthesizers and some meaningful output for the packet dumping that you are doing. Now, does everybody who wants to follow along with me in their book have Wireshark installed? If you do not have Wireshark installed, it is available under Student Resources Extras on the QCAT site. It would probably make a lot more sense to you if you are Wiresharking along with me, but if you don't feel confident enough to Wireshark along with me, that's okay.
I did until I put SP1 on my netbook and it stopped talking now. I will go get it and put it on this PC.
Ooh. SP1 has caused some people a bit of grief. Okay. SP1 has caused a few people some grief, actually. One of our students is having interesting wibbles after SP1. It just goes to show my theory about the odd-numbered service packs for Microsoft are just dicey. Wait for SP2. No, seriously, maybe it'll be resolved, but it is causing some people some grief. The other thing that was just an interesting point of view, Microsoft's got this plea to stop people from using Internet Explorer 6. I wonder, has anybody told them that all of that stuff between the address bar and the main page body in 7 and up is just really, really annoying, which is why a lot of people are still using 6, even if it is a horrendous security risk? Okie dokie. Now, what you basically have when you install Wireshark is you get this GUI thing where a lot of it is accessible except for the bit to start and stop capturing, unless you want to get busy with Hotspot Clicker, which I personally haven't bothered doing. And you've got a command line utility called T-Shark. Now, T-Shark is the command line utility that we're going to use. However, we need to do some preparation to make that happen. So if I open a command prompt, which is Windows R, CMD, I always feel really, really, what's the word, out in the open here with all my jaws coming through on chat, because I can't, you know, MSN any snarky messages to the other students or anything. Okay, if I type T-Shark, it doesn't work. Can anybody tell me why T-Shark is not working at the moment? I'll give you a clue.
You're in your home directory and it's not in your path. You have to do an environment variable.
I am going to, and I'm going to show everybody how to do an environment variable so that you can run T-Shark from anywhere. Now, for you old timers who've done this a lot of the time before, catch, you know, 10 winks or something. But we want to do environment variables. So I'm using Windows XP. If you're using Windows 7, you will have to go start and type in ENV. For me, I'm going to go Windows pause break.
Windows pause. System properties dialog. System
and I'm going to go... I'm going to go over here to advanced tab. And I want environment variables. Okay, so the user variables, I think I could actually put them in the user variables, but I could also put them in the system wide variables. Alright. So I'm in the system variables now. I'm looking for the path. And you'll see what we've got here is a whole series of directories separated by semicolons. Okay, the path statement in MS-DOS shows MS-DOS to be able to which directories it should search for executables when you type their command at a command line. And if you're back in the DOS days, you'd have C:\DOS and C:\Windows and a few other directories in there. Does anybody remember there was actually a utility, I believe, called FastOpen that would actually allow the computer to do the same thing for data files? But it was one of those things that a lot of people never used, and it was an interesting utility indeed.
FastOpen, and we even had Smart Drive.
Yes, and does anybody remember if you're installing Windows 95 from your DOS boot, you don't have to make sure that you had Smart Drive with write caching on, and that it was caching your CD-ROM, otherwise your CD-ROM would go for about 4 hours, and it would take forever to actually install Windows 95.
I had got rid of Smart Drive by the time I installed 95.
Well, what I actually found was that if you're actually installing Windows 95 and you weren't copying the install files down onto the hard drive and you wanted to cache the CD-ROM, you had to make sure that it actually had the CD, Smart Drive had to load after MSCDEX. And all you young people like Grace are going, what? What's MSCDEX? We don't have to worry about that crud until you do. So, yeah. I don't know, you young people have it far easier than we ever had, rant, you young people these days. Okay, we want to edit the path variable. Okay, so it's got all this stuff in the path variable, so I go end, and I go semicolon, backslash, program, files, backslash, Wireshark. I don't even know why I'm saying it, because the speech synthesizer is going to say it anyway. Okay, and...
Well, it benefits those of us who are too slow to understand.
You keep that up, I'll switch to eSpeak. I have the power. Actually, eSpeak would come out better on the recording, but I thought I'd take pity on some people. Okay. Let's see if T-Shark works now. I've still got a problem here. Enter.
Did you put quotes around program files?
System properties dialog, environment variables dialog, system variables edit button, multiply.
I didn't think I needed to.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, or you got to use proga tilde 1.
Alright, let's... I'll just have a look at the...
Shift tab, system variables, new button, alt plus W.
I am on 32-bit Windows because 64-bit Windows is evil. Actually, this doesn't have quotes in it. See? No quotes.
S-O-U-R-C-E space K-I-E-S backslash T-O-O-L-S backslash semicolon percent S K-R-A-H-S-E-R-I-W backslash S-E-L-I-F space M-A-R-G-O-R-T backslash colon C semicolon M semicolon.
Yeah, okay.
Tab, okay button. Tab, cancel button. Tab, variable name, colon, edit, tab, false, plus, L, shift, tab, cancel button. Shift, tab, okay button. Space, system properties, dialog, environment, tab, system variables, delete, tab, okay button. Tab, cancel button. Tab, user variables, repair, list, new, tab, shift, tab, cancel button.
Did you go to okay? I don't think you did.
Tab, error, recording button,
I have now.
Tab, cancel button. Shift, tab, okay button. Space, C, colon, backslash, windows, backslash, 32, backslash.
Let's drop out of the command prompt.
Enter, C, colon, backslash, documents.
Okay, so before you even get Wireshark going, you've got to figure out your path environment variable. Oh, it made clunky noises. Okay, rah, and there's lots of command line options that you're not going to actually pay much attention to, unless, of course, it all blows up sideways, and then you're down into the wiki to find out what's going on. The home site for Wireshark is wireshark.org. The wiki is on wiki.wireshark.org. The wiki is your friend. The wiki has links to all sorts of cool stuff that will stop your brain from going splotty. Well, it stopped mine from going splotty anyway. Alright, I'm going to CD into a desktop subfolder here so that I can scribble stuff all over my desktop rather than in my user profile directory.
CD. Desktop, enter, C, colon, backslash, documents, and settings, backslash, carry, backslash, desktop, reader.
Okay. Now, one of the things that you need to know about your machine is that it has multiple network interfaces. So if I just do a T-Shark and I don't tell it what interface I'm going to dump on, let's see what happens. Okay, let's type that in.
Shark, enter. Capturing on the Tansic L00 1 Gigabit controller up there, Microsoft's Packet SE.
Oh, it defaulted to the right interface. Okay, but on your machine it might not, because it defaults to being interface 1. Now, usually interface 1 is the first interface on the machine, and depending on how you install things, depends on what order they go in. So, if I do a T-Shark-D, it will list my interfaces. Here we go.
Enter. 1, backslash, device, backslash, NPF, underline, left, seven, 385, B9, FDF, 70, 47, B1, 386, 085, A9, B2, 039, D0, right, left, there, and Tansic, L00, 1, 2, backslash, device, backslash, NPF, underline, left, DF, 90, D0, 927, 467, 970, 799, after, right, there, 3, backslash, F, Rosalps, packet schedule, right, there, right, there, and C, colon, backslash, 2, P, packet schedule, right, there, right, there, and 4, backslash, device, backslash, NPF, underline, left, 3, 0, 8, 1, 86, 86, 86, 86, 897, 017, 16, 90, 39, right, left, there, and D0, right, there, after, right, there, and C, colon, backslash, documents, and settings, back.
Okay, so not particularly understandable, bless you, Grace. So we've got 4, which is a virtual Ethernet adapter, and that'll be the bridge one. And then we've got 3, which is another virtual Ethernet adapter. And then number 2 is my OpenVPN adapter, which is I really should do a Friday chat on that, because OpenVPN rocks your world. And it's very cool. Has anybody played with OpenVPN?
Very little, not enough to really know much of anything about it.
It's very cool. I think Mr. Legg has used it for various worky things to be able to tie bits of network together and VPN into stuff.
Yes, I am running it as a commercial solution for a company I work for. Sorry, I thought you were referring to OpenDNS, which is why I wasn't saying anything.
No. OpenVic to Papa November. OpenVPN.
Okay. Yeah, too many acronyms in this industry.
Yeah, there's acronyms in medical stuff too. It's just part of the jargon. If we didn't have funky names to call our things, I mean, then you wouldn't be able to identify the different objects. So it'd be like, you know, a USB watch-a-ma-jig. Oh, is that the watch-a-ma-jig or is that the watch-a-ma-watch-a-ma-jig? I mean, we've got to call stuff something. Ah, and Alex has finally managed to connect. No thanks to our computer infrastructure in here. Okay. Anyway, I don't have any problems with TLAs and FLAs and FLAs and SLAs. They're great. Alright, so the first thing you can do is you can start a packet dump on the network interface, and if you don't tell it what to do, it will dump all packets on the wire that this machine can see. Can anybody tell me a potential problem with it?
Because information overload, you'd get everything from everywhere.
And in fact, what am I doing now that will probably generate a whole lot of output?
Yeah, we're all chatting.
You'll get your VT as well.
Yeah, that's right. I'm connected to the Ventrilo server, so that would get me all sorts of things. All right. So the first thing you learn about Wireshark is, one, set your interface. So Wireshark-D for... Durr, I knew I should have set the interface. I don't know why it's... Oh, it must be D for device. It can't stand for that. That will tell you what different network interfaces you have. So if you have updated your path statement, you should be able to type T-Shark from anywhere. If you haven't updated your path statement, you're going to have to CD to /program files/Wireshark. Is anybody who's sharking, are we at the point where we can all go T-Shark /?, and it will spit things at us?
Yeah, I've got shark up.
Yep.
Alrighty. Okay. Now, a lot of you two, Brian and Pranav, probably won't learn too much out of this, but because you guys have been messing around, but we'll see. We might get lucky. Let's see if we can make some things happen. Okay, say for example we want to look at certain things on the network. Attack the American because I'm going to need you. Now, I want to look at all ICMP traffic on my local network segment. So Grace is going to crack a command prompt which will make a terrible bang. And I'm going to go T-Shark. I don't actually have to put in a -i thing on this one because it actually defaults to the right network interface. So I go -f for a filter,
-f.
And I go ICMP. Alright, Grace, can you ping 192.168.100.132, please? 0.0001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001 6.1001
that's not my jaws. So I kept hitting control and it wouldn't shut up. And I'm like...
Okay. Yes, I have the power. Although, as Lord Acton says, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I get to hit control. Well, see, there you go. I'm in control. I've hit the control key and I'm in control. Now, Did anybody notice, if you caught some of this, that the first packet that went out was an echo request? It was sequence 1. It was from 192.168.100.102 to 192.168.100.132. It had a time to live of 128. And then the next packet was an echo reply, sequence 1, from 192.168.100.132. It had a TTL of 128, and it was destined to 192.168.100.102. Did anybody, now that I've all said that, did you all sort of see that there was an echo request and an echo reply in there?
I noticed the TTL particularly, because that's one of the ways you can passively identify what operating system something is running.
Yeah, you can. But we're actually going to do this again, and I'm going to show you a nifty trick. So don't get to make sure that command prompt's open. Okay. Yes, Drew, what?
So if this is command line, is it possible to copy paste? Because I think it might, in certain cases, maybe not now, but later on, at least in lecture, it might be valuable to paste the output into the chat window so that we can review.
What I'm actually going to do is show you how to get it into a text file. That is my next thing, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to go back in here, and we're going to run our T-Shark command line. Remember F3? Does anybody apart from me know all of the nifty DOS command line editing keys, how F1 will copy one character from the template, F2 will copy to a character? And piping, and redirection. But does anybody know that I actually sat down and read the chapter in the DOS manual about the DOS function keys? F1 will copy one character from the template, F2 will copy up to a particular character, F3... I'm getting port unreachable messages. How interesting. Okay. Yeah, what we're going to do is we hit Control-C to stop the capture, and it's going to say 11 packets captured. Why does it say unreachable? Because it's a host on the internet trying to get ICMP information out of me. It's trying to probe me on a port that I currently do not have open, which is why the ICMP port unreachable is coming back. Okay, so I'm going to hit F3. Up arrow also works, but I'm an old schooler, so I'll hit F3. Charc-F-ICMP space greater than ICMP log.txt, and believe it or not, if I had a copy of T for DOS, which I don't, I'd be able to actually see the output, and I'd be able to see what's going on. So I hit enter. Okay, that goes to standard output. Okay, ping me, baby. 192.168.100.132. Have you pinged me?
You would ping you?
Yeah, ping me. You're not going to hear anything, so just run it and get the reply, because I'm going to show people what happens in a second. Okay. Are you seeing replies?
Me?
Yes. Okay. Now, has it finished?
Yeah.
All right. So now we've done that, we press Control-C.
Control-C, 8 packets captured.
Eight packets captured. Guess what? 4 packets from her, 4 packets from me. It's all fair in love, war, and pinging, okay? So there were 4 packets sent out by her, 4 packets sent back by me. We have 8 packets. The world is a happy place. So we drop out of the...
Enter, 16%.
Drop out of there.
Windows 10, desktop.
We go to the desktop.
Info.txt.
And we go in here.
Info.txt, notepad, edit.
And we go... And now I'm in my notepad document. We all maximize
menu,
this.
Menu bar, menu bar, edit.
There we go. Here we go.
Top of file. 0.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012162.0012
Okay, so just to make it easier for people who don't have this file, I'll do this. Oh dear. That wasn't a good thing. Oh yeah, there we go. It only read the last one. So there is the output in the chat window. Oh, it only pasted the first one. That's interesting. Alright, so that wasn't a good idea. So you'll have to make your own text file, because I can't actually paste the whole lot in here. Now, see how here it says 3.0, rah, 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 rah. That's because at 0 seconds the first packet went in, like 0 seconds of the capture, it's actually the time since the first packet was received. Then the next ones went in at 1 second, the next one went in at 2 seconds, and the next one went in at 3 seconds, which is why we're seeing 3.073483 seconds. Alright. Anybody got any questions so far?
Just go through the timing again. 3.0 yeah. seconds. You zero on 0 seconds. The first packet went in. Then what happened?
Yeah, and then okay. So zero. I'll go off the top here. Zero. That's the first packet. 0000000. Here comes the next one. 0.00021. So in other words, just after that 0 seconds, I bet 21 microseconds, the packet came back. 1.00 is the next packet that goes out. 1.0058 is the next one that comes back. 2, 3, 3. So we can assume that the packets are being sent out once every second. You probably knew that anyway, but I'm just pointing it out that the timing log actually shows you that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the time stamp looks particularly useless until you're actually looking for something to happen in a certain time frame, and then you sort of go, ah, that's actually worth knowing that this is the time I'm sort of expecting. All right, now there is another mode for Wireshark, and that mode is to allow you to, let's close this. Now, has anybody got any questions, or is anybody confused? Because, I mean, this is fairly advanced stuff. Okay. Let's do it again with lots of output. So we go T-Shark.
How would I learn I've actually closed what I want to look at? Would that just be...
You take the practice? Exploration class and do the labs, probably.
Fair enough.
Pretty much. But I'll...
Yeah. Not surprising, I don't know that.
Well, you have to actually know what you're doing. That's why they pay us so much. You just can't make it up. You just sort of, there's no sort of packet dump wizard that you sort of go, I want to look at the stuff that's busted next button. You need a bit of experience to know what you're actually looking for. There are some good resources on the internet that will show you how to look for certain sorts of traffic certain sorts of traffic and stuff. But let's go T-Shark. We'll go dash F ICMP, and we will go dash capital V. Okay, and we'll hit enter. Okay, ping me. You're pinging me. Look at all that. Whoa. Lots of information. Lots and lots and lots of information. Possibly a bit too much information. So the trick is to actually get it to... you get a whole lot of verbose output with dash capital V, and that tells you all different sorts of things about the packet. Now, there are ways of filtering the fields, which I haven't quite worked out yet. But there are actually dash E options and stuff, and you can actually tell it which fields you want to see and which fields you don't want to see. Now, if anybody knows how to do that, they can fill me in on that, but you can actually trim that down significantly. Now, but the interesting thing that I want to cover here is some of the simplistic ways of constructing filters to see what you want. Now, say, for example, I want to see any ARP requests on the network. I can go T-Shark... dash F ARP.
ARP enter.
Oh, hang on. I've got to get out of the existing T-Shark. That was stupid. There we go. T-Shark dash F ARP. Okay, did anybody see how it said Azuru colon blah 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 ARP who has 192.168.10.7 tell 192.168.100.35? Did anyone see how it said Azuru? If I go back up here.
Yeah, it's a nice who, it's a nice ARP request out there, but we've seen that about.
Okie dokie. Here we go. I'm back. Is that better, guys?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Alright, I'm just going to have to talk about things from this point on because the audio repeaters have dropped the ball. I'd have to actually set them up again. For some reason, my machine went under load and everything went. And it sounded pretty bad to me, too.
Sounds like me and the.
Stop that one. Okay.
The other option would be setting it up stereo mix and then push to talk.
Yeah, I can, but then I can't actually push to talk and listen to things at the same time. Because when I push to talk, it'll silence Jaws.
Oh, yeah. True.
Yeah. Whoa. Also, I'm running Windows XP. Okay. Now, so what I'm going to briefly talk about is... Hey, I didn't want you to... I've stopped the T-Sharks from running now. What I want to talk about is the construction of filters. So basically, how you construct a filter is the filter has to go in quotation marks. Okay, so it's T-Shark space dash I space whatever number you're capturing on, and then space dash F space quote mark filter 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 quote mark. So what you can do is you can do things like SRC space 192.168.100.132 space and space port space 123, which will get any NTP traffic generated from host 192.168.100.132. So essentially what you want to do is you want your conditions and your ands to tie the conditions together to limit down what you're going to get. So, for example, you might have SRC space 192.168.100.132 space and space DST space 192.168.100.102. Where do you look all of this up? On the Wireshark Wiki. There's actually little quick reference charts and stuff to show you how to put these together. There are some shortcuts. You can specify protocols such as ARP. You can specify only TCP traffic, you can specify only UDP traffic, or you can go protocol IP, which will show you all of the TCP IP stuff minus the actual ARP stuff. So that's the basics of how to capture stuff now in Wireshark. Now, one of the things you can do is you can run one of your captures, so you can go TCP dump dash F space ARP space dash W space ARP dump dot PCAP or whatever, and that will actually save the actual contents of all of the packets into the ARP dump text file or into the ARP dump binary file. Then when you actually go back in with T-Shark, you can go T-Shark space dash R space ARP dump dot PCAP space dash F space and put a filter in. So you can actually save your capture to a file and then go through it with different filters pulling out bits of information from the saved packet stream. So it's dash R to read from a capture file, dash W to write to a capture file. And sometimes it can be advantageous to actually save your packet traffic to a capture file, sometimes without the filters or with as minimal filters as possible, and then filter the traffic out that you would like to get out afterwards. Any questions?
Is that lower and or uppercase R's? It actually matters, I think.
It does, and it's lowercase. Yeah, so this is how you can actually go through. So the trick is that the actual science in it is figuring out what fields you actually want to see and what actual filters you want to put in place to limit the packets to what you actually want to see in the actual packet dump. And that's about what I have on Wireshark for the time being. Anybody else want to add anything? Mention anything? I was going to show you TCP dump, but all my virtual audio cables fell over.
I was just wondering,
No, go ahead, Chris. No problem. I'll ask.
That was actually Drew.
I'm not Grace, but thank you. No,
he said, Chris, that's worse.
What an in.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave that one alone. I was wondering if you can actually read the contents of packets. So, like, for instance, if there was email or instant messenger traffic or something that was unencrypted over the network, could you actually read the contents of the messages?
Yes, you could. And, in fact, if you were to use a utility called strings on the peak CCAP file, you would be able to pull any text strings out of the text files and actually get the various bits of data out. I don't know whether MSN Messenger encrypts its traffic by default. I don't think it does. So, yes, you could see what your roommates were. Well, there is a limit to whether you could see what your roommates were MSNing about, and there is a very good reason why it would be more difficult for you to see that. Can anybody see why it would be difficult for Drew to snoop on what his roommates were talking about on MSN?
If he had a switch or something, he would first need to do up poisoning before he could get to his MSN, the MSN of his roommates.
That's exactly right, because the traffic from your roommates goes to your switch, which then goes to your router. And you would actually have to, or you'd either have to run Wireshark on the computer that he wanted to know about, or you would need to get one of those links list switches that lets you funnel all traffic from certain ports through to a diagnostic port so that you can actually, and there is actually the capacity to go, all right, ports 1 through 4, you are going to go out on diagnostic port 8. And that's one of the links, this FS1008s or whatever. So you've actually got to make sure that the traffic you're trying to sniff is actually going to show up on your segment. I'm not saying that you would actually want to look at your roommate's MSN traffic. I'm just using it as an example because it's kind of fun.
Certainly don't. No.
But yeah, if you're doing POP3 usernames, like if you're doing POP3 email and you're not using secure POP, yes, people can nick off with your email user account names and passwords. If you're doing basic authentication with websites, like you're on, I'm just trying to think of a good example. I'm trying to think of a good legal example. And let's say, for example, you're authenticating with a curriculum on the QCAT website. People would be able to see that the username was Cavi and the password was Cavi. They would see that in the packet traffic. That's why Windows screams blue now murder at you when you use basic authentication. No, I've told everybody before.
The situation I was thinking of actually was a bit more insidious, which would be some smart guy at college sniffing the email traffic of everyone in the dorm.
Oh, absolutely.
What's interesting...
It's doable.
Yeah, it is. I have an interesting thought, and perhaps I'll play with it this week for fun. If I'm authenticated on my wireless LAN with my proper WPA2 keys and stuff, if I capture that interface, can I watch other people's traffic? I wonder if it... Because it can't really filter like a switch does. This could be fun to play with.
Now, what you'll find, and if you do get it to work, I'll be interested to see what happens. If the wireless access point is actually connected into a switch, then what will actually happen is that the you will only see traffic that originates from you and that comes back to you. If you want to sniff all of the traffic on a wireless network, you need a card that will drop itself into monitor mode. And I believe there is one card that lets you do that under Windows, but you'd have to get a card on a Linux box, such as the Relink 2060 or similar, that will let you kick it into monitor mode, and then you will be able to sniff everybody's wireless traffic. And that is certainly possible. This is one of the... You cannot sniff the security key of a wireless network because the security key is not sent in the packets. That would be silly.
No, but you could use AirCrack, especially on Linux, to actually probe and try stuff. I never used it because I don't know how accessible something like that is. I never had a chance. No. If you have the right kind of card, you could use AirCrack.
One of the things about the EEPC 701, which we've got a few of bouncing around here, is that their cards will quite happily, the Atheros 5K cards will quite happily drop into monitor mode. And I was actually able to drop my copy of Kismet into monitor mode. And what you can then do is look for wireless networks around the area, and if you've got a GPS connected to the thing with GPSD, you can actually get and log the latitudes and longitudes of all the wireless access points or where it thinks they are. You can crack WEP very easily. It's only a 56-bit key, and you can use known plain text attack because you know various things are going to be the same in the packets all the time, so you'll tend to look for those bytes and then run a known plain text attack on WEP. WPA apparently has keys that don't change, so it's not particularly secure either. It's more secure than WEP, but it's not particularly great. WPA2, you then have to launch a dictionary attack on, and that is much more difficult. Because you're dealing with much larger key spaces and stuff, it will be much more complex to crack a WPA2 network than it will be to crack, say, WEP networks. And over here we get a lot of routers that come from the ISP where the key is printed on a sticker on the side and it's a 10-digit hexadecimal number. That does reduce the key space somewhat, but it is a fairly large key space to search. So it's not as easy to bust into wireless networks as perhaps it used to be.
The other question I had was, do you know of any accessible way to do stream reassembly? So let's say I'm capturing a Skype conversation. Now, assuming I could decrypt it, which is of course another but, what would you use? Because I know that there are tools available, and I'm trying to remember what my colleagues used to do this, but you can do it, and it's all GUI and inaccessible to do stream reassembly.
Yeah. It is. There's things like Snort and various other things. As far as I know, there's no easy way to do accessible stream reassembly. I know Wireshark, when you can access it, will actually allow you to pick the protocol that you're actually looking at, and you can go, show me all of the Telnet stuff, and it's actually got zoom in and zoom out buttons, and it's really quite nice if you can see. But as far as I know, there's no accessible way to do, replay attacks and stuff and re-inject those packets. I believe Aircrack NG will run from the console, and it's fairly accessible. I was going to try it on something like GRML and see how it went. But it's just something I haven't quite got to yet.
Wireshark on Linux is accessible, I think, the GUI. I tried it with Orca once upon a time, and it was quite nice.
Okay, I'll have to have a look at that. I've personally found that Orca's key bindings are different enough from Jaws to put my head into a meltdown state, so I haven't really done a lot with Orca yet, but it is on my list of things to play with.
I do wish that we were able to actually press that start button. That would be kind of cool, so we could use the GUI.
I haven't even looked at the GUI. Is it not a graphic, or is it just nothing, like screen readers don't see it?
No, it's got text there. It's one of those really frustrating ones where it's got all this text there and you can see it all with the Jaws cursor and everything, and then the button to actually start it, you can't click.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. But and the button's not sort of labeled, Jaws speak, graphic 684 or something?
No, Randy tells me it's not. It's invisible.
Yeah, I couldn't see it at all.
Kerry, would scripting that actually work?
Yeah, I reckon if you used Hotspot Clicker, it would be possible to get the button to be clicked. If you got somebody sighted to hover over the button once and then save the coordinates with Hotspot Clicker, I think you could actually start and stop the capture. That's how I would handle it. But the problem with Wireshark...
Then you could share that set with other people, and everyone would be able to use
it. Yeah.
Look, I can have a look at scripting it. I have written many, many Jaws scripts before, so I've written for entire call centers as well, so I could have a look at it and see if we can get it working.
Well, have a look at Hotspot Clicker, because that's what I'd be using, because if you can't actually see the location, you won't be able to script for it. But if you can actually get Hotspot Clicker to work, you can actually get it to click various arbitrary locations on the screen, and that will probably get it to go.
No, the problem, Dina, with Wireshark and stuff is they use GTK, and I'm not sure how much information you'll be able to extract from that, but it'll be fascinating to do.
I'll have a quiz over the weekend and see what we can come up with.
Even if you can click those start and stop capture buttons with hotspot clicker, that'll be a good start. But the other problem is, though, that one of the problems is that we'll be able to get access to a certain amount of this, and some of it will be fairly useful, but the ability to actually click and zoom in and out on the different packets and highlight different packet fields and then zoom in on those... it's going to be a lot more clunky for us to do that than it would be for somebody who just sort of goes click, drag, oop, that's what I want to see. And that's what's slightly frustrating about Wireshark.
You know, one of the things I have done in the past is to use Snort, okay, and run it like a sniffer, and then pump the whole output of Snort into a database. And then I can analyze it to my heart's content if I so desire.
That's cool.
So, yeah, a lot of people also take the capture dumps and they feed it into a spreadsheet and stuff as well. So you can feed it into a spreadsheet or a database and classify it all down that way. There is that accessible packet sniffer on the Mac that that Brian was telling us about, which I really should grab and install at some point. And it's apparently quite good. There were big plans to write a packet sniffer that blind people would be able to use, and we were going to do it on the Mac so that, as you know, it would be like, you know, packet selected, interact with packet, protocol data units, IP address, interact with IP address, but it never quite happened. That would be really cool, and that would make that stupid interact guff that VoiceOver goes on with somewhat useful for something.
Well, that's an interesting project. So you...
Go ahead, Dina.
Part of one of the thoughts I'm having here is, can we, you know, you could actually write this in VB or in, and it's been many years since I've actually programmed, but possibly to actually write a front end for T-Shark that'll pull in the data and then, you know, allow you to be able to see whatever's...
That'd be really cool.
In a Goo environment.
I think you'd have
a
lot of very happy admins.
Doable.
Has anybody asked on Blind Sysadmins how anybody's doing this? I've got yet to... I should actually go and do that. Sign up on Blind Sysadmins and see if anybody's actually doing it.
You know, the thought here is similar to the way MP3 Gain and so on is doing it now. They've got a front end, a VB front end, and what they're doing is they're running actually a DOS program in the background, and they're pulling in all the info and showing it to you in a GUI.
That would make things way more user friendly.
Yeah, I usually use TCP dump as well, but I think that could work. It would certainly be... I mean, there is this run tshark.bat that Pranav has put up, and that asks you for various parameters and stuff and then constructs the tshark command line. So that in itself is useful. That might be worth a look because it's a fairly simple bat. But yeah, it's interesting. Interesting concept.
I've always been a really big proponent of making some kind of front end or something to make this more user friendly to people, because the way it is right now, it's just very hard for people who are not, you know, command line superstars to do anything with this program, and to make a front end for it would make it a lot more accessible to people who are average.
This seems kind of like a program that's a little bit too powerful for anyone to be able to use. That kind of scares me.
Yeah, it is very powerful. I think I don't know. Has anybody noticed that the slogan on the Wireshark homepage is "Go Deep," which gave me a chuckle.
Oh yeah. Well, you're gonna do that when you're using that thing.
Yeah, but obviously Wireshark is a very complex beast, and it's able to do many, many things, and it's able to do many, many things very well. The other problem with Wireshark, and we will be able to mitigate this by actually looking at the contents of the packets, is a lot of the information for sighted people is actually shown with colour. so you can see different colors of things, and you can, you know, highlight the colors and then use display filters to show this, 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 and this. But I agree, Wireshark is not an easy piece of software to use. It's not an easy thing to come to terms with from constructing the expressions. That's certainly true. But at this particular point in time, and I'm sure we will see improvements in the next couple of weeks to couple of months as we sort of delve into this and see what we can do with it, it's better than not being able to dump packets at all, which is where we were last year. Alrighty, anything anybody else wants me to cover? Do we want to go back through the... I mean, for those who don't want to stick around don't have to. Do we want to go back through the binary to decimal and stuff conversion on the end of the lecture or something? In a couple of minutes, is that something people would like to see? Otherwise, we get to do it next week.
Have we fried enough brains?
Yeah, has everybody had enough?
Yeah.
You've always had enough.
Not when it comes to donuts.
I don't mind if you go on a continue.
Well, I have to leave for a doctor's appointment anyway, so I'm biased.
Alright. Well, we can... I don't know. Otherwise, guys, we can leave it till next week. I don't have a problem doing it next week, but it just means next week is going to be that decimal to binary conversion lecture, and we all get to spend a lot of time working on how those conversions work and stuff, because sadly, when you're doing exploration, it is one of the core things you need to know.
I'd honestly almost wait and give that its own separate lecture, because it does deserve it.
Yeah, we can do that.
Dina, could you contact me? Because I think we should discuss this front-end bit in VB. You could pull something from the command line.
Yeah, last year I think you did it as its own lecture in UK. Good.
Yeah, we can. Yeah. It might be interesting. Yeah, I'll drop my Skype name in the chat window.